we Southerners, at least those of us who've been brought up in the South, the Deep South, are not known for our straight-talking, no beating around the bush way of dealing with each other. We have a reputation of telling good and fanciful stories. We may be known for the sweetest tea on earth and the ability to deep fry anything that comes our way. We could come up with a list of top 10 or even top 100 notable attributes of Southerners, and being straightforward and saying what we mean or clearly speaking our minds will not make either list. There's no need for me to reveal to anyone here today what bless your heart really means. I know you have your own experience of hearing someone say, well, isn't that interesting? Or isn't she something? And knowing full well that these words are not intended to be complimentary, but just the opposite. And you know, I gotta say, just this once, I sometimes wish Jesus was just a little more Southern. His words to the disciples today make me more than just a little uncomfortable. I wish he had just stuck with the words about the value of the sparrows and God being intimately involved in every aspect of our lives, so much so that he even knows the number of the hairs on our heads. Those words make us sit up a little straighter, knowing that we matter to God. They give us a warm, gushy feeling inside that some of us so desperately crave, because we need to be reminded that although our lives appear to be in shambles, that God is there with us in the mess and knows what we are living through. And that is true. But Jesus didn't leave well enough alone with those good feeling words. He also said things like, nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing secret that will not become known. And depending on our particular vantage point, this may sound reassuring or downright threatening. It certainly doesn't support our long-held notion of not airing dirty laundry. But as always, there's more to this than meets the eye. The disciples have been out on their own some now. They've been practicing the good work of spreading the news from home to home and town to town. And what they've discovered is that this can be downright hard work. Not everyone who hears the word of love of God made incarnate in Jesus will jump right on board. As a matter of fact, some folks will be downright hostile and even try to physically harm you. And if you start proclaiming that someone is God-made man, that especially in the first century in the Roman Empire is blasphemy and worse. It's treason. And that's the backdrop of this conversation that Jesus is having with his followers. And that is why he says things like, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. And he later gives his own life as a fearless example of a body being killed, but a soul being fully restored and overcoming death. Still, these are not easy words. Jesus is not tamping down with the truth with lofty platitudes about how life is a bowl of cherries. He names the hard truth and gives his disciples a major reality check. And his truth-telling becomes even more discomforting when he says the most unsettling words of all. Do not think that I've come to bring peace to the earth. I've not come to bring peace, but a sword. I've come to set man against his father and daughter against her mother and daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And one's foes will be members of one's own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. A friend of mine, Evan Garner, who's a priest at St. John's in Decatur, wrote a blog post earlier this week about this particular passage. His premise was that the word Matthew uses for love is not agape, the Greek word for unconditional, unemotional, pure gift love that God has for all of us and that we are called to have for each other, but is instead the word filio, which is a sort of brotherly love. It is, as Evan rightfully noted, a relational love. And then he claims that begins the explanation of this most difficult passage. We are not called not to love our family members less than we love God or Jesus, but we are called to put our relationship with Jesus in first place, and our familial relationships should flow from that relationship. And that all sounds good, and I certainly don't disagree with Evan, but his apt exegesis of this passage does nothing to make me feel less uncomfortable with these words. I would love to say that my relationship with Jesus is the relationship that drives and informs all my other relationships, and I feel certain that you would too. But that little white lie might be shouted from the rooftops. And now I'm left feeling unworthy yet again. And I don't like feeling unworthy because I love my children more than I love my very life. And what about that first sentence? Do you think that I have come to bring peace to the earth? I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. Hasn't Jesus been named the Prince of Peace? Yes, by the prophet Isaiah in chapter 9, for a child has been born for us, a son given to us, authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And then just two chapters later, Isaiah describes the peaceable kingdom which will be ushered in by the Messiah. The wolf shall live with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the kid, the calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like an ox. The nursing child shall play over the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the adder's den. They will not hurt or destroy on my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And this is why it doesn't make sense that Jesus comes to bring a sword and was not sent to bring peace, or that Jesus intends for families to be divided, but that instead, following Jesus, truly following Jesus, prioritizing one's life on the teachings and model of Jesus will not make everyone love you. You may even be persecuted, or your family may separate themselves from you. These words are not words to encourage or urge division. There's nothing that we learn from the model of Jesus that urges division. But the truth of the reality must be named. And naming that reality, Jesus does. Around here, we might have liked it a little better if Jesus had sugar-coated his words a bit or just left this piece of reality out altogether. But above all, Jesus challenges us to be genuine, to let our true light shine, to let his truth-telling light shine through us. If we trust him enough and are secure enough in trusting Jesus, nothing else can harm us. Amen. Yeah.